Santa Claus, the Hangnail Fairy, and Mr. Potato Head. I suppose childhood can be characterized as a process of sorting out misconceptions from reality. The misconceptions can either be foisted upon you inadvertently by adults or intentionally by perpetuating cultural icons or mores. Think Santa, Easter Bunny, or the Tooth Fairy. Emerging maturity then is represented by a series of aha moments when the status quo is challenged and a distinct personal reality emerges. One of my favorite childhood misconceptions was my literal interpretation of daylight savings time. As an 8-year-old, I was a bit perplexed on how to save daylight, but wanting to be a gamer, I would go outside with a jar, put daylight in it, and then screw the top on tightly and store it in my closet. I don't recall when I realized that Santa Claus was a phony, but I do remember, with some regret, cruelly educating a wide-eyed child. I was skiing with my next-door neighbor, Nell, in Utah, around 1964, and we happened to be thrown together in ski class with the family of Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense. His family was presented as the elite, and I remember being among those watching McNamara in hushed awe as he whizzed down the ski slopes in baggy ski pants. Somehow I became jealous of his children, who had a famous father and an apparently gilded life. So one day in the cafeteria line, I told the youngest child, probably around 5 years old, "You know there's no such thing as Santa Claus," and then was immediately remorseful as her eyes filled with tears. The next 2 days were spent in terror, as I feared that McNamara was going to confront me for spoiling his child's vacation. But it turns out that he had other things on his mind. As parents ourselves, we perpetuated the Santa Claus scenario with our children, but one year I drew the line at the Easter Bunny, since I did not want to bring any more candy or kiddie crap into the house. My plan was simple. We were not churchgoers, so I just didn't mention Easter at all to the kids. It was only several weeks later that my son said, "Hey, what happened to the Easter Bunny this year?" Another time I tried to create a mythical feature, the Hangnail Fairy. I was playing on a woman's softball team where everyone showed up with their children. When our team took the field, any leftover players were basically assigned the chore of babysitting maybe 10 or 12 kids at once. Since our team was only marginally talented, it could take a good while to get 3 outs and have all the mothers return to the sidelines to tend their children. I was the designated babysitter for one inning of barely controlled chaos. One nameless little girl somehow got her hand caught in the chain-link fence as she screamed for her mother in right field. As I tried to unwrap her tense grip, I saw that she had a nasty-looking bloody hangnail. When the universal antidote of a cup of apple juice didn't quiet her sobs, I tried a more mercenary approach. I explained to her that having a hangnail was actually a good thing, because when she got home, her mother could cut it off and put the hangnail under her pillow, and that night the hangnail fairy would come and leave some money, and probably a lot, since blood was involved. Her sobbing quieted a little bit, but then she looked at me and said, "Hey, how come I've never heard of the hangnail fairy before?" Thinking quickly, I said, "Do you live in Winnetka?" "I live in Lake Forest, and the Hangnail Fairy always comes to our suburb, but maybe Winnetka is just not on his route." The combination of the possibility of a payoff, plus a subtle disturb point that Winnetka was somehow inferior to Lake Forest, gave her enough to think about, and she sat quietly on the bench. I tried to make myself scarce as her mother finally trotted in from right field. My most recent aha moment about childhood misconceptions came just the other day as I took a critical look at Mr. Potato Head for the first time and thought, what was everyone thinking? How has this creature become a cultural icon for the past 3 generations? Mr. Potato Head is quite frankly repulsive, a plastic globoid figure that bears only a faint resemblance to a potato, where the head and torso are rolled into one, with arms extending from just below the ears, and the feet seem to sprout from the chin, or maybe it's the butt, but regardless, there do not seem to be any legs. Presumably, the body parts had to be a certain size to avoid being considered a choking hazard, but the resulting oversized pieces make the eyes totally bugged out, the nose a bumptious red, and the lips suffering from a collagen overdose. Mr. Potato Head started innocuously enough in the early 1950s as a collection of facial features that you could use with a real potato, i.e. BYOP. However, in the era of post-war frugalities, mothers did not want to waste a real potato on a toy, and there was also the risk that a moldering potato could be left beneath a bed or a couch. The plastic potato emerged in the 1960s, and the product really took off. God knows why, since now the toy was far removed from the sweet simplicity of the real-life potato, and children could easily experiment with ripping the eyes from their creature or making a pathetically deformed humanoid figure that could be ridiculed. In the 1980s, the potato came equipped with a compartment in its head/butt where you could store the loose parts. While certainly a convenience for parents, I would think that this would be a major source of confusion. You can put your eyes in your butt? This seems to confirm one of Nick's childhood misconceptions, in which he thought that the butt was essentially a storage place for poo until you had to go to the bathroom. Mr. Potato Head came to life in the 1998 movie Toy Story, where the creators gave him a sarcastic personality voiced by the equally acid-tongued Don Rickles. At one point of particular peevishness, Mr. Potato Head whips off his lips and basically kisses his ass. In the DVD extras, the creators stated that Mr. Potato Head's crabbiness could be explained by the frustration of having your facial features removed or rearranged at will. Hasbro is the manufacturer of Mr. Potato Head under its Play School banner. Play School toys are designed to be educational, which is in sharp contrast to its misspelling of school, spelled S-K-O-O-L, a far more egregious error than when Vice President Dan Quayle misspelled potato by adding an E to the end. According to its website, Mr. Potato Head offers multiple different educational opportunities. Here they are. Basic body concepts. Being able to identify body parts can allow your child to tell you what hurts when he is not feeling well. Imagination. Would Mr. Potato Head still be able to kiss Mrs. Potato Head if he had an ear where his mouth should be? Problem solving. Today, he might just be deciding where Mr. Potato Head's nose should go, but someday he might be dreaming up new energy sources or designing a new airplane. Fine motor skill. As your child picks up Mr. Potato Head's goofy glasses and pushes them onto his eyes or his ears or nose or mouth or feet, he's developing and refining his finger movements. Hand-eye coordination. In order to line up each plastic piece and push it into Mr. Potato Head's plastic frame, your child needs his hands and eyes to work together. Good hand-eye coordination is a critical foundation skill that's necessary for success in all kinds of activities, from doing simple puzzles to throwing and catching balls. Control of muscle strength. As your child picks up Mr. Potato Head's big bulbous nose and pushes it into his spud bud's ear, he's figuring out how much force he needs to get the nose to go in and make it stay there. Good control of muscle strength may help children know how much force to use to pat their pet. Play School would like us to believe that Mr. Potato Head is a key gateway toy for future rocket scientists, athletes, or other critical thinkers. But basically, what we are dealing with here is a pretty simple toy that somehow got established as a bizarre cultural icon, followed by contrived attempts to reposition Mr. Potato Head as an educational toy to meet the new cultural expectations that toys are self-improvement tools. In my view, these efforts are nothing more than putting lipstick on a pig. I also hope that the muscle strength lessons of Mr. Potato Head are not extrapolated to pets as children try to rip the nose off the family cat or dog. Perhaps I should not be so hard on Mr. Potato Head. He does have some advantages. Hasbro never had to grapple with such thorny issues as culturally sensitive toys, i.e. how black to make a black Barbie. Mr. Potato Head transcended cultures, and what's more, he already was dark-skinned. In the 1970s, the American Cancer Society was looking for a celebrity spokesperson for the Great American Smokeout, where smokers were encouraged to give up smoking for at least one day. Mr. Potato Head effortlessly went cold turkey when his traditional pipe was simply deleted from the kit. The Cancer Society could not have found a more reliable spokesbud. Imagine if they had relied on Tiger Woods, for example, and had to deal with the fallout of reports of Tiger secretly smoking all over the country.